quote something that our next speaker, who comes from Pop Tropica, who's the publisher of Pop Tropica, Jess Brawler, has to say, which when asked about creating his own IP, basically said, one can be more reckless, wonderfully so, with one's own IP. And that's particularly interesting because he starts, Pop Tropica, I'm sure you all know, started out as part of Pearson's Family Entertainment Network and then sort of evolved because of a certain author who did Wimpy Kid into a platform for multiple publishers, for advertising, for branding. It's now returning, which I hope Jeff will talk about, to creating its own IP again. So I want to hear about that evolution. So Jeff, somewhere? Oh.
Thanks so much. So much to say and so little time, so I'm going to jump into it and apologize for talking so quickly. I am Jess Brawler. I'm publisher of Pop Tropica. Pop Tropica is a virtual world that's all about storytelling. And allow me to make sense of that. Some number of years ago, I found myself publishing a site called FunBrain. FunBrain's a huge site. At that time, it was getting about 8 million unique kids per month to it. I was really struck with that inside that URL, those many kids could fit in there. It was basically a site that had learning-based games. That's all that it published. On Friday afternoons, sometimes there were 30, 40,000 kids simultaneously playing one game. And any game that we put up there, they would engage and they would start playing with it. And it struck me that this was like having 7 million kids inside of a football stadium. And no matter what we showed them on the overhead projector, whether it was another game or advertisements or whatever, that they would look at it and they would engage it. And that was like really cool. That was really powerful. But having come out of 2.5 decades of book publishing, I was a little bit frustrated that there wasn't anything up there but gaming content. And I thought, you know, couldn't these kids be interested in something else, some other genre, some other type of content, perhaps something bookish? So I thought, well, that'd be great. I'll publish a book on the overhead scoreboard and make all these kids really happy. But of course, I couldn't get a decent book to publish because anything that was decent was in the hands of a publisher or literary agent, and there was no way in hell they were going to put a book for free up on this site. That was just really a very, very stupid thing to do. So I was extraordinarily frustrated. But I also, it turned out I was very lucky because on my staff I had this very quiet, unknown, wimpy sort of design director named Jeff Kinney. And as happens when you're in book publishing, and all of you know this far better than me, you have anything to do with book publishing, eventually everyone you know says to you, so I've been working on a manuscript, what do you think? And I said, oh, Jeff, God, we have a great relationship. I don't want to screw this up, but I'll look at it, and I'll be very honest with you, and if it's okay, we'll have a next part of the conversation. So I remember sitting in my kitchen at 10 o'clock one night, completely laughing my ass off. I guess I was the first person to read Diary of a Wimpy Kid, and I called up Jeff like 11 o'clock, and I said, let's do it. So we went ahead and we published Wimpy Kid on this site. And boy, did it take off. Within 2 months, we had 70,000 kids a day reading this thing. When I quit counting in 2008, 50 million kids had opened up this page, and they had seen 500 million page views. That was 2008. So like McDonald's, this must be up to billions by now, because we continue to publish it on our site. And I thought, and Jeff and I thought, boy, that's really cool. These kids will really read on a screen. Because one of the things that was happening was during a school day when kids were playing at a computer lab or in a classroom computer, they were reading about 8 pages deep. But in the evenings and on weekends, they were reading 13 pages deep. And it was, and the gender was boy, girl, perfect 50-50. That was very cool. So we're saying, okay, so these kids are going back, getting on their computer at night and on the weekends, and they're reading. They're going deeper and deeper on the screen into this book. Kids want to read books on a screen. So I said, okay, that's a really cool idea. So the other thing that happened was I thought I had died and gone to heaven, again come out of trade book publishing, because I was publishing to 50 million kids, and it was producing a lot of advertising inventory, and I was selling a lot of ads off of Wimpy Kid, mostly to book publishers, actually. And that's all that I was doing. I had a margin going that would make a loan shark jealous, because... Really, think about this, you guys. When you guys go and die and go to heaven, there's no returns, there's no warehouses, there's no cartons, there's no delivery trucks, there is no printers with Chinese New Year issues. There's no dock strikes. I mean, it's you and those kids, and you publish to them, and you take some money, and it's glorious. So Jeff and I said, okay, we'll do some more stories. Of course, I still couldn't get any other books except Jeff's. And that was a little frustrating, but I said, well, what the hell, we'll go ahead and do this ourselves, just like we did Jeff's ourselves. And we have a great business model, that's wonderful. We know kids want to read a screen, that's wonderful. But we also had this other notion, which is really the most important part of what I had to say. And it was, we thought we were at a moment, and it seemed somehow uninspired to simply put book pages on a screen. And so we used these examples. When theater goes to film, the first thing someone does is put one camera in an orchestra pit of a live theater, and they film it, and they declare we've done film. Well, they've really not done film. They simply put theater on a screen. They really don't do film until they got to California and get cameras on tracks and do editing, and they start to use the literacy of the film genre. So that's very cool. And then we thought, well, didn't the same thing sort of happen when we went from radio to TV? That the very first thing you do is you put a camera in front of a radio announcer and you declare that you've done TV. Well, you've really not done TV. You've really simply put radio onto a screen. And it's not really until you get maybe perhaps another generation, you get somebody that starts to really understand the richnesses of this medium, and you end up with something like Kill Street Blues, 10, 15 years later. Now, that's cool. That's really cool. So what we were observing with kids and we were thinking about was that kids had developed the game literacy, and that they know how to forward a narrative by playing inside of a game in the same way that we know to forward a narrative by turning a book page. So we said, okay, that's what we'll do. We'll create a virtual world. We'll invite the kid in. They'll create an avatar, and we'll engage them in narrative stories, which we started to do. We started to do quite a few really very cool and very interesting stories. And it's really not that different from what book publishing does. We end up with a script and a story, that's okay, and then we develop beautiful art across which that story plays, and then what we do is we have also programmers who determine how the characters are going to move across that art and pursue the narrative that our writers have created. And boy, this thing really took off. We never spent one penny on advertising. We introduced it to some kids on FunBrain, and about 2 years later, I think it was about our 12th story. We call our stories islands. Every time we publish a new story, we call it an island. About our 12th island, someone said, do you know you're the largest kids' site in the world? Said, oh, really? And I said, we didn't set out to be the largest kids' site in the world. We just set out to do this experiment about trying to tell storytelling to a new generation of kids with a new literacy. And that was really wonderful. And to this day, depending on what metrics you look at, we are the largest kids site in the world. Today we have about 8 million kids a month, unique kids that come to the site. They visit 3 times a month on the average. They spend 30 minutes on each visit. They come from over 200 countries around the world. Web browser is set to 100 different languages. And if you do the math on what I just told you, it turns out that kids spend well over 1,000 years per month at our site. And what was really wonderful about that is that they're there engaging in stories. They're not there playing games about shoot it up and car thievery and hookers. They're not doing social networking. The keyboard is dead on Poptropica. You couldn't connect with a creep if you even tried. They're simply there spending 30 minutes a visit engaged in our narrative. We're telling stories. And this was really, really, really exciting. Okay, so the next thing we also have to do is figure out what the business model is. We got all these kids. We tell wonderful stories. We determined that. So we said, okay, we'll do a brand. We will aspire to be Disney. Because the technology changes, we have kids from all over the world. We need a brand with which we can ride our storytelling to different generations of kids across different languages, across different territories, and keep up with the technology changes every 48 hours. So we just would always have a brand in which to do our publishing. And then we thought, well, we'll just continue with some of our proven revenue models. So on Poptropica, we continue to do advertising. Our largest advertisers are entertainment companies like Nintendo, film studios, and book publishers. And we also introduced membership at one point, and that's really a wonderful business. You just get a credit card that just renews automatically. You start every January with an immense amount of revenue before you get out of bed. we started to do some licensing. We do some books. We have animated TV series, which if I talk about it, I get shot. And we did a Nintendo game with Ubisoft, and we did that this fall, and it sold very well. So we're very excited about that. So again, I'm back in this world where, you know, just the revenue is really exciting, and we've collected this audience between FunBrain and Poptropica of 10 million kids around these two URLs who are pre-interested somehow and proven that they're interested in narrative and in stories. They've read Jeff's book. They read our stories. They get engaged in our stories. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful vehicle for advertisers of book publishers, et cetera, et cetera. And then we came to the question, well, are we going to do our own IP or are we going to license our IP? So we did some licensed IP. This really took off. I mean, Lincoln Pierce, wonderful gentleman, was living in practically poverty up in Maine, and we had lunch with him and said, let's go ahead and do this, and boom, it took off. You guys all know about that. We do Wimpy Kid Islands. We have Roald Dahl and Charlie and Chocolate Factory. We're very proud, obviously, to do that. Magic Treehouse, and in, classic. And so we did some of these, and everything's discovery, so we did some of these licensed properties, and then we did our own islands. So it's about 7 islands. We've published maybe nearly 40 now. All the others are our own islands. And I've really discovered at the end of the day that it's much smarter to do our own IP. There are 3 properties that I would do in a heartbeat, obviously Lego, Star Wars, and Harry Potter. But basically everything else, it's going to be our own. And that's for 2 reasons. One's business and one editorial. In the business, it takes the same amount of resources to create a licensed island as to create our own island. And then at the end of the day, when you go to start licensing this stuff, you want to include this license Alan in an animated TV series, you want to do a line of toys, you want to do books, you can't do it because it's someone else's assets. Also, our Alan's had the same amount of traffic as does a licensed Alan. So the licenses really weren't helping to drive our traffic. Kids just wanted a good story. They didn't seem to be all that turned on by the licenses that we had. And then it's just really efficient to be able to do our own Alan's. There's no lawyers, there's no arguments, there's no approval process. We just do it. And I know this will stun people, again, because I am a book publisher. When we get an idea for a story, we publish it 90 days later. The cash flow on that is just absolutely remarkable when you think about it. We sit around, we'll do Lunar Colony. It'll be sort of like Apollo 13. This kid will end up in the moon, and there'll be a father-son relationship, and there'll be funding issues at NASA. Oh, that'll be very cool. We write a script in a couple of days. We start to create the art. We start to do the programming. All those costs of that staff. And on the 90th day, we publish it. And that's when we get most of our revenue because advertisers like to be on a new island. A lot of kids come at that point, so it's a really powerful advertising moment. And then our membership is simply about early access to a story. So kids who have membership get to see the story for 2 or 3 weeks before we release it to everyone else. The site is absolutely free. It's how you build a brand. You just get millions and millions and millions of kids there, and you let everyone read these stories. I mean, I just love the fact that we published to all those kids from across the world. All they need is internet access. They don't need a parent with their credit card. They don't need a parent that loves them. They just need to get their hands on an internet, and they can enjoy our stories. It's like the most liberating publishing I've ever done in my life. So at the end of the day, it was just much, much smarter to do our own IP. And then the other thing that I realized, I thought our stories were better when they were our own stories. There's something about handing an empty canvas to our story writers and to our artists and say, go, just go, do whatever you want to do, you know, go wild and crazy on us, as opposed to saying, here's a canvas, build a story, but the PMS colors are this, and the characters have to be this, and you have to get this approval. And, you know, it's like suddenly their storytelling, their energy is just bleh. Okay, I'll make it like all those other people want it. So that's really it. I wanted to take time for questions. Our future is really about mobile. I've been very successful publishing on the internet. I think that the challenge of making money on mobiles, I think we finally recognize a model. We think we're going to be very hot on that in about a year or two, and we're going much more global. We're not monetizing all those kids from all those other countries. I just want to, I'll stop there. I don't have a great call to action. I don't have a summary to this. I just wanted to share with you that there's a group of people with a passion about storytelling that is equal to yours, and we're doing some things that maybe other people aren't doing, and it might inspire you or cause you to pause and think. Quick. Okay, so you got to come up with some questions, or it's going to be written. God, wasn't that good. Yes?
You got to act to an audience. Just out of curiosity, what kind of revenues do you guys generate?
We are owned by Pearson, which is a publicly held company. I can't begin to tell you that and keep my job. So I can tell you, there's got to be some safe way. It's wonderful. It's the margin that's wonderful. I can't tell you enough how wonderful it is to publish directly to kids without gatekeepers. Those kids go there, there's no parent telling them to, there's no teacher, it's just wonderful, and it just eliminates so much overhead. I mean, our overhead's got to be like 5% because we're not engaging attorneys, returns, warehouses, all that stuff. So it's wonderful, and no marketing. I see a hand here. My moment in heaven, maybe momentary, it was such a joy not to have Barnes & Noble take 50% of all my effort and keep it for themselves. It was so nice to get out of book publishing and just publish directly to the kid. I do fear that as the more and more of our kids move to mobile devices, that more and more are going to start getting our storytelling on apps, and so Apple's simply going to become the Barnes & Noble in my life. But I am hopeful that technology will allow us probably, I'm a book guy, what I know about technology, but the people I work with tell me maybe in 36 months we'll be able to do web-based apps that can deliver the quality, I didn't show you a video, but the quality of PopTropica storytelling is really dynamic. It has to be a native app now, which means I have to share the income on it. I don't think it's proven yet. I think we're going to hit a rough period and then hit another wide open period, I hope. Back here.
Do you have information about the demographics of the kids? So, for example, are you reaching and inspiring kids to engage in this next generation reading that maybe have fallen off in terms of either traditional, socioeconomic strata? Are there differences? Do you have any information about,
I think the demographics we have are everything that we can have within the limitations of COPA, which is perfectly fine. I mean, that's just the world in which you work in, and I wouldn't want not to have COPA. I mean, this is the safest site in the world, and I'm absolutely delighted about that. We'll never, ever show up on the front page of New York Times with something bad having gone down there. But we do ask kids to self-select their gender and self-select their age when they come into the site. Which is what we use to guide our editorial. We also use to guide the serving of our advertising clients' messages. And so, again, the gender has come down 50-50 on kids using the site free. Interesting, when you get to membership, it goes 60% boys, 40% girls. I was thinking earlier about that gender question. I think this may be where boys are more comfortable in getting their stories, and I think that's a good thing. As I said, we know exactly where every kid comes from in terms of their location around the world. We know what time they come. We know how long they're engaged. I can tell you, for example, this is fun stuff. And Philippines, 35,000 a month. Bosnia, 8,000 a month. Israel, 17,000 a month. So we know all that. Kids, we've never done any marketing. I see you there. We've never done one bit of marketing. If you go on YouTube and search PopTropica, you will see thousands and thousands and thousands of videos that are put up by kids who videotape their avatar going through our stories, and they have millions and millions and millions of viewers. So the kids have taken this and run with it. I'm done, right?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.